I left out a major detail, or actually a couple major details in my correlation of the years in telling this story. So to clear that up, I'm just going to go back and review and stick these in where they go. So if you remember, 1988 was when I got busted by the police and had to, do time in jail, lived in a van, and did a ritual on a hilltop and had the wind blow through a Bible. Okay, that began a life of ritual for me. And so I did my time, had some magic happen, came out, had to get my life back together. 92, it was back together by then. I was playing in a very nice restaurant, a high-end restaurant. It was directly across the street from Nicole Brown's house. It burns down in 92. 94, this is what I left out. In 94, the day of the slow speed chase, O.J. Simpson was at Nicole Brown's grave, and he left the grave to go to the 5 freeway, and the only road between the grave and the 5 freeway was Lake Forest Drive. And I was sitting in a restaurant when the slow speed chase started. I've been sitting in a restaurant right there on the corner, right on the on-ramp of the 5 freeway. The on-ramp goes right behind this restaurant. And O.J. Simpson passed me going from Nicole's grave to the freeway, headed to L.A. Then I'm sitting inside the restaurant, and all of a sudden the slow speed chase comes on after they spotted him. And so I call my sister to see if she was watching. I call her up. I go, "Julie, what are you doing?" She goes, "James, I was heading home from L.A. and I just passed the slow speed chase on the 405." I go, "Really? Wow." And so O.J. passed myself and my sister at the beginning on the day of the slow speed chase, at the beginning of this whole thing, this whole Nicole Brown thing. I didn't know who Nicole Brown was at that time. Well, I guess I did because she had just been murdered, but I had just found out who Nicole Brown was when she was murdered. So yeah, clear that up. When you're telling stories sometimes and you only get one shot to tell the story, there's no editing here, right? I'm just talking to you as a person, so I have to correct that stuff. Anyhow, so where were we? What year were we at? Oh, 1994. Denise comes into the club. So speed chase. Foundation goes in the same parking lot as the restaurant that burnt down. This was all before I got to the mountaintop. I get to the mountaintop in 1996. I click some bracelets together, praying for purpose and direction. And lo and behold, OJ's balls manifest, which was exactly what I needed. It was something like that to bring this whole esoteric connection to a head, no pun intended. And and so that's where we're at. Julie gets, to testify in the child custody case, and I get with the foundation, and that's where we're at this point in this story. That's the review. It doesn't end here, folks. There's a lot more magic to tell you about. I remember the first time I walked through the big glass doors of the Nicole Brown Foundation. Actually, it was called the Nicole Brown Simpson Charitable Foundation at that time. I walked in and met Lou Brown for the first time. He was the first member of the Brown family that I had the pleasure to meet. He was a very gracious man and very kind, and we took a liking to each other. I think it was because of the fact that I came and told him that information about what OJ did to my sister that he appreciated me. And even though they didn't get the kids in the trial, they still went in there with what they wanted to go in there with. So I was always happy to know that I was the one that took them that information and didn't keep that a secret, right? Like my sister tried to get me to do. So it was a nice office, nice furniture. it was a big place for a foundation, you know, and Lou had his own office back there, and it was fixed up nice. And I'd walk in, he'd be glad to see me. And, you know, every time I go in to see him, he'd be glad to see me. And that was every time I checked my mail, you know, my P.O. box, I'd go there to the post office and jaywalk across Coast Highway and visit with Lou Brown. And we'd just sit there and shoot the shit. We'd talk about all kinds of things. And unfortunately, I can't remember anything that we talked about that was 20 years ago. But, you know, I would try to suggest to Lou about doing some artistic things, you know, with the cause, and he wasn't feeling it. Excuse me. He wasn't feeling it. He just didn't have the concept in his mind to do something artistic. So it just had never happened with Lou. We just were always friends. I'd visit with him all the time. And then when he retired, Denise took over the foundation. And it was at Lou's retirement party that I met Denise Brown for the first time. That was a nice party too. And she walked in with a, you know, leopard jacket on, her short hair and no makeup. And she actually kind of scared the shit out of me, because it wasn't just the no makeup and the short hair. It was just because of the fact that I'd seen her go through all that tragedy and trauma and drama, and the people like that are somewhat intimidating when you meet them, because you don't know what to say to them. You don't know how to let them know how you feel. So, but she took the, I remember she took the tension out of the air and say, "So I guess you come with the building." I said, "I sure do." And that's when me and Denise met, and we started to work together. And I'd go down to their foundation and change things. Like their business card was black and white, I changed it to color. Their website was black and white, I changed it to color. Brought their look up to the times that they were in. And it was fun, and I learned a lot. I learned how to help people. I dealt with a lot of people that had tragic issues in their lives, and they were trying to heal from it. And I learned that I had a lot of, you know, emotion for that, especially being an artist, so I could apply my art in ways that would help them to heal. And I recall, you know, like playing songs for Denise, like Heart and Soul. I remember the first time I played it for her, and remember Heart and Soul was the song that we were recording when I found out about OJ exposing himself to my sister. And she would go, "Oh, it's so beautiful." And it ended up to be Nicole's memorial song. We played it at every single one of Nicole's candlelight vigils on June 12th. I remember when we wrote Flame, me and Jonathan Moffitt, we recorded it. And we wrote that for Nicole and the victims of Columbine. And I played it for Denise, and she goes, "Oh, it's just so beautiful." And she used it. We played that music. She used my music in her cause. And, you know, that's what I was praying for on top of the hill, was purpose. And this had purpose dripping all over it. It was just dripping with purpose. So I just dove in, and that's when Nicole became my angel. She became my first angel, because I'd see her face all the time from working on her projects and their events. Nicole's face was on my computer every day, every single day. So she became my first angel, and I hung her face, her beautiful face, up on my angel wall, which is right above my shrine. And that's how Nicole became an angel. And it's funny, because 10 years later, my mom died. My mom was a big supporter in what I was doing with the foundation. She used to always tell me, "James, I'm really proud of you for what you're doing with Denise and the work that you're doing with that foundation. That's really cool of you," something like that, she said. And so when my mother died, it came to, I would have never found this out until she died, but when she died on the 19th. She was born on the 19th and died on the 12th, and Nicole was born on the 19th and died on the 12th. Now, I thought that was kind of angelic, you know, that my supporter and my angel, my second angel, she turned out to be, and my number one angel, because, well, she's my mother. That her and Nicole were born and died on the same date. Different months, but the same date. Those numbers again, there are those numbers again, they're always popping up. And that's pretty much my angel story. I've dealt with a lot of, being in that foundation, I've dealt with a lot of, or experienced a lot of people dying, you know. And I started an angel wall. I would hang their pictures up on the wall, along with relatives and friends. And I guess that's why I started the Flock of Angels, because there was angels everywhere around me. So in 1999 is when I started, I founded the Flock of Angels as a sister organization to the Nicole Brown Foundation. Oh, I just had another memory. I remember when Denise got there, one of the first things she did was scrape Simpson off the door. And I was there helping her scrape Simpson off of the door of the foundation. Cool things like that. And there's more cool things that happened with the Browns and I. And as I tell this story, I'm sure they'll come back to me. Right now, I just wanted to get through the angel part. You understand my angels. The Flock of Angels, check it out, flockofangels.org. And it's turned into something else. It's evolving. And so have I. But this purpose, even though I don't work with the Browns anymore, the purpose that I developed while working with them is still very much active and very much important to me. And I continue on with that work. Loved me some Denise Brown. It didn't matter what Denise needed, I was there for her. Anything. And she knew it. Denise is one of my angels too, but she's still alive, so I can't put her on the wall, you know? But I loved me some Denise Brown. And for years, we kept it really, you know, copacetic. We kept it really professional, you know, platonic, whatever word you want to use. All I would do is come to the foundation and do what I went there to do and leave. I never hit on her. I never, you know, told her I liked her or nothing like that, but she knew I liked her. So one year we had a party together. It was because our birthdays are 3 days apart. She's on the 29th of July, and I'm on the 1st of August. And so we had a party at Ken Norton's old joint. I think it was called Oasis at the time. And it's the first time that we really partied together. And after that party, next time she was in my office, you know, she said to me, "I didn't know you were fun like that. I always just see you sitting behind a computer. You're fun." And then the next thing you know, titties came out, and next thing you know, they were in my mouth. And you can use your imagination after that, but if you want details, yeah, I fucked her right across my desk. And the funny thing about it is, Denise and I wrote a story, and we wanted to make a movie together before she moved to Italy. And we probably still can make this movie, Denise, if you're listening. But I told her when I was writing the script, and I wrote the first script, it needs to be rewritten, but I told her when I was writing the script, I said, "Denise, I wrote in that part about you and me screwing in my office. It's in red. If you don't like the way it's done, if you don't like it, let me know, I'll take it out." And when she read the script, she goes, "I loved it." That's how cool she is. That's how cool all those girls are. A bunch of cool girls. And it's a tragedy. It's a real tragedy that this happened to that family. Because they're so cool and fun-loving and free-spirited. Yeah, that type of thing can change people, and it changed them. And I caught them on the side of the change. I never knew them before the tragedy. I only got to know them after the tragedy. And it was a hell of an experience. And I wished them all well. The ones, even the nephews and Sydney and Justin, I wished them all well, wherever they are. You know, you don't stay in people's lives all the time. You pass through their lives. And our lives crossed for a path of about 18 years. Anyway, wrapping this up, that's all I have to say for now. I hope that you're enjoying me revealing myself to you and enjoying these stories that I'm telling. And I have many stories to tell. Even once I get done with the OJ's Balls story, or OJ Balls, not even his balls, they're just OJ Balls. He doesn't even own them. Yeah, they're just connected to him. They're not even his. That's what this was all about. This whole fiasco, OJ Balls. A lot of cool things happened from it. And there's more to share and more to expose and more to bring on. As we bring it on, baby. Bring it on.